I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to All the Small Games. My name is Levins, and joining me today, the one and only John Valenzuela.
Oh, there's probably more of me out there, but I'm the best one there is.
Have you Googled
it?
Are there
other Levins?
There are a ton of Andrew Levinses, or like or lots of Andrew Levins. But
oh, right,
yeah.
There's a few. Like that's the thing that my spelling of Jonathan isn't like standard, but I think there's like one or two other. Valenzuela parents out there that were like, let's give him a first name of Jonathan, but spell it so that everybody will get it wrong for most of his life.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Jonathan spells his Jonathan using only ampersands.
Yes. There's a silent
his mother is Grimes.
In there, though.
Yeah.
Oh God.
So we're doing a big 91st episode of All the Small Games today. We're reviewing two pretty exciting games that we have both played this week, which is very cool. One of them is Sable, a game that we have been awaiting for a long, long time.
Hugely anticipated.
Since it was announced over 2 years ago now. There's just been a game that we've been super excited for. And it's out. It's on Game Pass and PC. We'll be talking about that later in the show. And then a game that I mentioned last week. We are being like, just we are drowning in quality indie games at the moment. And last week I brought up another game that hit Game Pass, published by Humble Bundle. It's called Flynn, Son of Crimson. And it is a platformer with a whole bunch of other like RPG elements. It's a lot of fun. So those are the two games we'll be talking about today. Two games that you can play for free if you have Game Pass. Free with inverted commas.
Yeah, heavy air quotes on free, but still.
But before we get into the reviews this week, last week there was a Nintendo Direct with mostly big game announcements. But there was some big small game announcements too. Speaking of anticipation, John has been hotly awaiting the chance to buy his favorite game of 2020, Disco Elysium, a third time. Oh no, you've only bought it the one time, right? You have
yes,
it on PC?
I've got it on my laptop, and thankfully if you'd already owned it, it upgraded to the Final Cut version for free.
Right.
But I have not only been anticipating the release of Disco Elysium Final Cut on Switch to play it again myself, I'm also super excited for you to finally play it.
Yep, I'm definitely 100% gonna play this very brown long game.
Yeah, your pre-review of it is it's very brown. Levins, play the goddamn game, all right? It's like one of the best games ever made, in my and no doubt a few other people's opinions.
Are you gonna play it a third time when it's on Switch?
I've only played it like 1.5 times so far. Like I just tried out Final Cut on my laptop just to get a taste of it.
Cool.
But I'm going to do a full playthrough again on Switch.
It is a game that supports multiple playthroughs, right? Like you can be a completely different type of person.
Definitely. You can like, you very much decide what kind of character you want to be. And then you can just like play that to the hilt. So if you go into this game and you're like, I'm going to be an absolute idiot, drug-fucked policeman, disco cop styles, you can do that all the way.
Unreal. So that's, yeah, Disco Elysium is going to be on the Switch. Is it halfway through next month?
October 12th.
Cool. So that is coming out. And then a game that is out now is a game that I said was out now last week, but not on Switch. However, 1 week later, it is on Switch, and it's free. Not free if you have Game Pass. There's no air quotes as I say that. It is Deltarune Chapter 2, the kind of sequel, spiritual sequel to Undertale by Toby Fox. Originally, Undertale, the first chapter, was a free download. It came out on PC and Mac a year and a half ago or so, and then a few months down the track, they put it out on Switch for free as well. I played it on my Mac and thought I was going to have to do the same if I wanted to play Deltarune Chapter 2 within the next month. But thankfully, I held off because, yeah, on Friday during the Direct, they announced that Deltarune Chapter 2 is free on Switch and I think all other consoles as well.
Was it like a shadow drop or?
Well, yeah, it's like available right now. It did was update the, if you've previously downloaded the Deltarune Chapter 1, it now is called Deltarune Chapter 1 and 2. I haven't gone in it yet to see if you can select Chapter 2 from the start. It's not a particularly long campaign, the first chapter of Deltarune, but I would be cool just to be able to dive straight in, even though I played the first chapter on a different platform. But who knows? We'll find that out at some point. A second to breathe and play a new Switch game. Like I said, we're drowning in indies at the moment, so it's hard to get a moment.
The other bit of news is I think it might have mentioned it on the last step or something. The next chapter of, in my opinion, the highly underrated game, The Long Dark, has a date now. It's October 6th. We have a title. The fourth chapter is called Fury, then Silence, which goddamn, what an evocative title of a chapter.
Is it a survival game again? I can't remember what kind of game it is.
It's the like snow-based survival game with a really heavy kind of story. Like there is a mode in the game where you can just survive out in the wild for as long as you want, or there is a story mode that follows a downed pilot who's searching for his ex-wife and trying to figure out what the hell is going on with the world, because apparently there's been some big catastrophe. But the next chapter is like set in a prison, and it just looks wild. It looks like really good time. I'm super excited, and it looks like it's coming to all platforms on the 6th as well. So I'm going to fire it up on my Switch. Get into it.
Whoa. For the longest dark. All right, now it's time to review some games. And look, do we want to do the hot little contender, the sleeper hit that I think could get a pretty high ranking in my game of the year? Or are we just going to go straight to the game that everyone, including us, has been waiting for many, many years?
You know what? Let's do Flynn, Son of Crimson. Let's start with that.
This is the take you by surprise little indie that could. Flynn, Son of Crimson came out 2 weeks ago. It was published by Humble Bundle, who have published countless. They are rapidly becoming my favorite indie game publisher. I think they just got Humble Games, but it's the same guys that run Humble Bundle, which is a charity. Amazing way to get a huge game collection quite cheaply, and all profits from their bundles go to charity, which is very cool. But they've got a game development and publishing house as part of Humble. And Humble have given us games like Kato, Slay the Spire, Dodgeball Academia. They were involved in Toem. It shows up when it came up in the credits, because my kids and I rolled credits on that last week. Archie lost his mind. He was like, "That's the same guys that did Dodgeball Academia," which we finished the week earlier. Hey, side note, we finished Toem, the photography game. I imagine you finished it too.
Yes.
Did you get? Did you Lovely. Find all of the achievements and animals and all that kind of stuff?
Found all the animals. Finished all the kind of quests on
Stamps.
The card.
Yep.
As for achievements, like I know one of the achievements is you've got to wear the clogs for the entirety of the game.
No, just for 5,000 miles. I don't know how long that would take you to do, but yeah, if you haven't played Toem yet and you're going to start it and you with the intention of 100%ing it completely, when the old man gives you clogs, don't scoff at them when you realize it halves your walking speed. Just suck it up and keep those clogs on until you get the achievement, because yeah, I basically 99%ed the game, and then I was like, cool, only one last achievement to go. I'll just look up what that is. And
it was like,
yeah, you have to, like, there are guys that have like held like gotten rubber banded their controller, and so they can just walk away as the character in Tom just walks around in a circle
for an
hour and a half, and that's how you get the trophy.
I'd imagine you'd just be like, "Hey, Archie!"
Yeah, totally. No, he was pretty bored by it. I was like, "Oh, just do this for him." He couldn't even last 2 minutes. He was so bored.
All right.
But
hey,
man,
Tilly.
So that was an amazing game. Really, really a cute experience. And I think 100%ing it, or 99%ing it, was also really fun. Figuring out what was being asked of us for the achievements, from like the cryptic clues that the achievements are called, and then trying to solve them. Getting all the stamps and then getting the final picture of the game of Toem itself. Really satisfying experience.
The ending reminded me ever so slightly of A Short Hike.
Yep, absolutely.
And that it's like beautiful, beautiful visuals on a mountaintop kind of thing.
Well, yeah, you're climbing a mountain in both games.
Mm.
Celeste, Toem, and A Short Hike. Big three-way handshake.
Yeah, spiritual siblings there.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about those games.
Back to another game where you climb a mountain.
Yes.
Son of Crimson.
That's true. So this is a game that's been developed by Studio Thunder Horse. Great name, by the way. What else have they... I think last week we brought them up, and something else... They made something else that I liked. But yeah, they're the development team behind... Flynn, that Son of Crimson. I think maybe it's the only game that they've made, according to their website.
I think it was. I feel like it's their debut.
Cool. Well, it's a great debut, and I love pixel art games. I make no secret of that. I'm at my happiest when I'm playing a pixel art game, and this is one of the best looking pixel art games I've played this year. Like gorgeous, vivid, very colorful pixels. Like great enemies. So basically, you play as Flynn. This like silent protagonist kid who is told to go take your enormous dog, who is also like the guardian spirit of the land. Her name is Dex. You go take her out for a walk, and your grandpa or your dad, or either your grandpa or your old dad, says, "Hey, make sure you take the sword with you. Get some training in." And you take your dog for a walk, and then you meet this mysterious figure who tries to like sap your power using a crystal, and then you end up being given power instead. So she saps the power from your dog Dex. And then runs off with the power that she stole from him. And so you have to, you're told, like, you know, Dex will die unless you help her by traveling to these different destinations and getting these, like, you know, MacGuffins from all these different locales up this big damn mountain. It's a big adventure story, but it's not cutscenes so much. The majority of the story is told through NPC interactions, which I really like. And it has elements like, you know, you're encouraged to revisit levels. So it is like, you know, side-scrolling platforming levels, but they're not stuck, you know, it's not this big one enormous map a la a Metroidvania game. Instead, there's like a hub world,
it's like an overworld map,
that's the
thing.
Word. So it's like a Donkey Kong Country or a Mario World. You are choosing each level on the map and then going in and doing it. When I started this game, the combat's very, very simple. You have a sword that isn't particularly powerful. You don't have any special moves. And enemy variation is pretty minimal. The platforming isn't particularly challenging. But it's a gorgeous looking game. The soundtrack's good. And I was like, I could play a few more levels of this. This is fun enough. Then, just as I was getting a little bit bored of it, you unlock a new magic move, and then you are given access to a skill tree with maybe like 30 options of things that you can spend. Because, you know, the whole time I was playing these like first five to ten levels, I'm just collecting all these jewels, and I have no idea what the hell I'm meant to be spending the jewels on.
I was in the same boat. I was like, I have 2,000 of these things. When the hell do I get to go spending them?
Because every time you die in a level, you use 5% of your jewels. And I was like, oh, is this bad that I keep losing 5% of my jewels? I don't know, what am I even collecting them for? Is it a Wario World thing where at the very end, Wario Land thing, at the very end, you get given a castle based on how much currency you've collected in the game. Well, Luigi's Mansion did that too, but no, it's not that. It is you meet someone. You basically like you get to like the kind of hub world, maybe like six levels in, and it's a place you keep returning to, a kind of like big city, and you keep finding people throughout other levels that then return to that city, and once they return there, they can offer you things, and there is one lady there who for a cost can teach you new moves and unlock new stones on your skill tree, which give you like attacks, bonus health, all kinds of things. It has that great almost Hollow Knight-ish kind of thing where you have like a meter of a health meter, but then you also have a meter of like crystals that you can hold down Y and that will heal you.
Yes, yes.
And you get that by collecting green crystals in each of the levels. There's also a hidden shiny object in every level, and in that same hub world, there is a character, like a big weird deity
monstery kind of thing,
and you give him the shiny thing that you find on each level, and he gives you 1,000 jewels. Yeah, there's a lot going on, like I've already seen myself get completely sucked into the, you know, I think I need 100% in this game. I think I need to unlock every skill tree option. I need to go back and get every shiny thing, because the more I play this game, the better it gets. And for anyone that's only played like maybe the first three levels and be like, oh, I know what this is. It's kind of like a duller Donkey Kong platforming kind of thing where you're a kid with a sword. It gets so much better so fast. Once you hit the skill tree, I think the game improves pretty drastically. But I definitely am aware this is much more of a game for me and less a game for you, John. So please.
That is... Look, I'm in the same... Like, I... Because in the Discord, obviously, I read you were playing it and you were like, it's pretty basic for the first few levels. Like, I've been, you know, you said you've been playing it, it's pretty basic. And then you had this big turnaround where you're like, whoa, this might be my top five game of the year kind of thing. Which obviously I went, it's on Game Pass, I'll just download it. I'll take a pause from Sable for reasons that we will discuss when we get up to Sable. And just give this a try. And I definitely was like, as I was fighting through those first few levels, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I see kind of where you're coming from. I've just unlocked the skill tree myself.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to some judicious shiny thing finding and not dying overly much on the way up there, I managed to stack quite a few of those red gems and buy like a bunch of upgrades. This was a night or two ago, and I think I took last night off to do something else, but I can see kind of like now the combat becoming a lot more satisfying since I've upgraded like the combo moves I can do and how powerful my magic is and stuff like that. I definitely... One thing that I think is a big draw for me in terms of still playing is some of the earlier levels, like you were saying in the hub world, you'll hover over various nodes in this hub world and be told that there are multiple exits for a level.
Yep.
And so I definitely want to go back and be like, okay, well, how do I get to these multiple, like, where are these multiple exits? I know some of them are like hidden underground.
Hidden behind a key as well. Like, and you find a key in a later level and then it'll be like, oh, now you can go back to that earlier level and find the other exit.
I'm looking forward to that. I definitely passed a sort of like part of the world as I was making my way up the mountain that suggests to me that maybe I'll unlock a wall jump at some point.
Yep.
Like, there's definitely like, I feel like there's a double jump and a wall jump in my future.
Yeah, I feel that way too. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things you're like, how the hell do I get up there? And the truth is you can't sometimes.
Yeah.
But other times it is just a case of like you backtracking, finding another way that ends up looping around and you end up back where you thought you couldn't get earlier. So it's a cool mix of that. Yeah, it's like it definitely rewards exploration.
It has that fun thing of like, I can see it, now how do I get to it, essentially. Yes. I think you're right, it's definitely a very you game. So I'm curious how long I'll kind of stick with it, particularly with so much other stuff coming out at the moment that requires attention. But I think what it does isn't necessarily the most flashiest thing, but it does it very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you're looking for, like, you know, a game-changing story, you're not going to find that here, but you are going to find, like, a, like, my kids are playing this with me, or, like, you know, watching me play it, and it's their first kind of intro to, like, a, you know, a hero ascending darkness kind of, you know, Zelda-esque story. And it's really enjoyable from that front. Like, I think it's a really well done version of that kind of thing. And you're learning more about Flynn. He's an orphan kid who has, so yeah, obviously that's right. The old man is not your old dad. He's definitely your grandpa, or maybe just some old man who's taken a shining to you. These are all potential characters in one of these fantasy, kind of games.
Yeah, the old man archetype, but he's your Kenobi.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did, like, the more you learn about your history to the land that you're in, is really cool. You end up unlocking this, basically like a power meter that when you hit it, you hit both of the trigger buttons, and you unlock like a berserker rage kind of mode. Ooh. Which is really useful in boss fights. There's a lot going on, and they just keep introducing more and more different magics and weapons. Like, you're adding weapons, you're adding different types of magic you have access to, and then making all those things stronger as well. And it's really, really fun, because you hit some enemies that you have to cycle through various different magics and weapons to get through, which is really cool.
Okay.
And I like that, like, usually when you play one of these games, like, I would probably describe, like, the combat. It feels almost like a brawler game more than a platformer in parts, because all the enemies you need to hit them at least, you know, 5 to 10 times for them to die. But I love that you have a dodge roll, which is really, really great. Like, the invincibility window is pretty forgiving and pretty easy to understand. So it's totally, like, a really fun game to, like, see how far you can get without taking any damage. Because even though it is, like, it's quite forgiving, you can find yourself with one thing of health left and nowhere near any of the crystals that you need to heal yourself. So it can get tense pretty quickly if you aren't careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some good environmental puzzling as well, I think.
Yeah. Have you done any of the underwater levels yet?
No, I've not done underwater. I've done the beachside, or the not so much underwater, but it's like you're making a way across a waterside thing, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a really great puzzle where you're basically bringing the level of water up in the level repeatedly. Ooh. And it's really clever. And then, like, you realize, oh, now it wants to be, if I want the secret in this level, I have to go, like, hold my breath and try, hope it lasts all the way to back at the start of the level if I want to get this trinket. Right. So playing that, doing that, making that decision when you have two kids that aren't used to these kind of games, like, no, Dad, you're gonna run out of oxygen. You're gonna run out of oxygen. great shit. Really, really good. I love Humble games. Like, I just think every time, I love how many of them show up on Game Pass. I don't know whose decision, if that was a Microsoft or a Humble decision, but I think it's a really, really smart decision, because it means I'll play every single one of the games they publish.
Sure.
I mean, and that's a combo of, yeah, availability versus, like, track record. Yeah, track record is really, really good.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I was just like, because Annapurna used to be the top, and then you know, you go and release one time-looping game about incest.
After a weird game where you shrink stuff and basically just stop working with celebrities, Annapurna, and I'll be happy.
Sure.
I think that is like a genuine criticism. Like, I think someone, Annapurna, has this, like, fucking hair in their bum about, like, oh, we have to prove that video games are art, or, like, and the way to do that is to make them like movies. And it's like, I don't want to, like,
it's even, I don't want to watch a game. We're a subsection of a film production company.
Sure, of course.
Like, yeah, look who's on our Rolodex. Let's make use of them. But I look, crowbar some time into your schedule and play The Artful Escape.
I know, yeah. So you finished that recently, like, too?
I did. Oh, amazing. Really stuck the landing. Really satisfying. But yeah, that's some of the best celebrity voice work I've heard in a game so far.
I'll add it to the things, the list of games that I will play when everyone leaves my house but me.
Yeah.
When my kids my kids and wife go back to school. I get, and it's such a small window. I figured out that, because, like, New South Wales reopens on the 11th of October, but school doesn't go back until the 1st of November.
Oh, damn. Okay.
So I have from November until we break for Christmas, which I think is going to be like December 19 or something like that, sure, to play every game from 2021.
You're like emailing the kids' school, like, any chance of like a school camp or something?
Yeah.
And take my wife too.
Yes, totally. And my daughter, who's not quite ready for school yet.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So Flynn, Son of Crimson, incredibly enthusiastic thumbs up from you.
If you are, with the, like, you know, addendum that,
the
like...
The caveat, sure.
Yeah, like, you know, you have to make sure that these kind of games, this, like, you know, evocative of, like, Sega Mega Drive and Super Nintendo, you know, big fantasy platformer action brawler games, like, if that appeals to you, this is a really good one. But if you are someone that, you know, thinks pixel art is boring... Or, like, is over side-scrolling stuff. Like, I understand your hesitancy not to like it, but I think this is a really cool game. I like it a lot.
If you're over pixel art and think side-scrolling platformers are boring, maybe you've washed up at the wrong podcast.
I mean, I feel like we're like, I don't know. I do feel self-conscious of reviewing those kind of games a lot. That's my absolute favorite kind of game, though, is like a pixel art platformer. So I'm always looking for a good one.
Provided you're approaching them with nuance rather than it ticks these two boxes, so it must be good, I think we're fine.
Yeah, wait till you hear my review of the frog game, Dojoran or whatever, that came out last week. I love it, but like, I don't know.
It's
an unbelievably simple 8-bit style black and white platformer. I'll talk more about it next week when I've finished it. So we're going to wrap up our review of Flynn of Crimson and Son of Crimson and move on to our review of Sable. But first, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you so much, sponsors. Now, John, let's talk about Sable.
Preparing myself for this one.
Do you want to go? Oh, no. Do you want to go back in time to when we first found out about it?
I want to say it was an E3, maybe back in 2018, 2019.
Something like that, yeah.
So, it was definitely... I mean, it would have been the Xbox Showcase, I feel. And
2017, you know, is when they started developing it, and it premiered at the 2018 PC Gaming Show at E3.
Oh, okay. So... obviously, it was... I mean, I don't think there was any real in-game footage. It was kind of just a look and feel sort of trailer. But immediately, obviously, you've got that fantastic Mobius-inspired art style to it.
You know, meant to be very evocative of a comic book by the artist... French artist, Mobius?
French artist, yeah. And on top of that, I mean, particularly one thing that really grabbed my attention was a snippet of a stunningly gorgeous track by Japanese Breakfast, which, you know, since the release of the game, I've discovered is called Glider. And it's kind of like, I guess, what you would consider the lead single off the soundtrack.
Yep.
But, you know, it's this this young figure on a fairly alien world, hopping on top of a gliding hover bike and just taking off on an adventure, essentially.
Yeah,
and
the concept of the game was influenced by Rey in The Force Awakens on Jakku. If you remember those opening scenes of that movie, that inspired Sable.
Yeah, so definitely like the kind of trailer that makes you really sit up and pay attention, because it felt like such a breath of fresh air based on so much of the other stuff you would have been seeing during that showcase, essentially.
Like, totally.
Here is something that we haven't really seen before, and that obviously led to us becoming very excited about Sable.
Mm-hmm. So this is a game that's been developed by what started as a two-man team, Shedworks, Daniel mm-hmm. Feinberg, and Gregorius
Kytheriotis, I think his name is. I was practicing pronouncing it yesterday.
Kytheriotis. Yes. So, and then we've also got writer Meg Jayanth, and then Japanese Breakfast doing the music as well. So I think, you know, there's probably more people that they brought in, but yeah.
Oh, definitely. I checked the credits out just for reasons we will discuss during the review, but yeah, they definitely brought more people in.
So yeah, it's been published by Raw Fury, who are a great publisher. I think
they are
unsung hero of indie game
underrated.
Publishing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a good, this is like a good get for them, really, to be honest.
Trying to think of like, I liked, they did Gorna, Dandara.
They did Dandara, which was great.
That game Bad North, the real-time strategy game. I liked that game. Urnog Unlimited, the Niflas game, they did that. they're a good publisher. And that game Kingdom and Kingdom Newlands, that's them too. But yeah, Sable is definitely like the biggest game that they've published so far, maybe because of the hype, but also it is a third person adventure game, which definitely is evocative of exploring the land of Hyrule in Breath of the Wild, and more recently The Pathless, which was published by the aforementioned Annapurna. Those games feel very familiar as I play this one. So it came out on Friday. We've been playing it on Game Pass. It's also available on PC. So you can play it on all Xbox consoles with Game Pass or on PC. John, you've put a little bit more time into it than I have. I played a shitload of the demo. My first criticism is I wish that I didn't play a shitload of the demo and or I was able to... Like, it would have been great if I could have just carried over my game from the demo. Because I'd made my bike.
Where did the demo cut off, essentially?
Well, I made my bike, which is maybe like 90 minutes in or something like that. You have to like go on a scavenger hunt to find pieces to make to make your bike. And then I was like, I kept exploring, and then I stopped and didn't go back to it. But like that's still like having to do a lot of those tasks again. I was like, oh damn it! Especially because I've read a lot of criticism of the bugs in this game, and I was like, oh, that demo was like that I played was like, I wouldn't say buggy, but like some of the driving mechanics may be a bit clunky, but I didn't suffer for any bugs. What are people talking about? And I fired up my new game on yesterday, and I had two crashes in the first 10 minutes of my playing, and I was like, oh god damn, because like, I knew you were going to be critical of it, so I was like, oh, I don't want to be like, no John, it's actually good, having only played the demo. So I wanted to put a good chunk of time in, and I was like, shit, not off to a good start, having to like, yeah, like the game crashed on me one time, then the game wouldn't let me like select anything when I was in the game, so I couldn't get on my bike or talk to anybody. That dot didn't come up, and then it crashed again, and then I reloaded it. And I've played 3 hours since then. I haven't had a single problem. And adding on to that, I absolutely adore this game. And it bums me out that the technical mishaps are causing people to have an experience that isn't as positive as mine.
Yeah, look, you think that I'm about to tear this game to shreds. I'm not.
This is the new John Valenzuela. He hates indie games.
There is
we need you to issue an apology, my new favorite segment of the podcast.
All right, what am I issuing an apology for?
Last week you accused the game Eastwood of not having the ability to hot swap between weapons.
Okay. And you know what? Pixpill, apologize to me for not including a tutorial telling me I could hot swap weapons. I am not apologizing for that. I apologize to Obscure Tales for accusing them of having a game-breaking bug in their game. Like,
impeach John Valenzuela, 2021.
That's a horrible thing to say without, you know, kind of coming back and affirming it's not the case. Like, it's not like I was like, there'll never be one in there, and it makes the game impossible to play, and it also gave me, like, crabs or something like that. Like, yes, someone did point out on our Discord that it does have a hot swap weapon function. All I'm saying is, why did it take someone in the Discord to tell me that? Why didn't the game tell me that itself? I ain't apologizing for shit, Levins.
Apologize to the great nation of China, makers of the game Eastwood.
Yeah, oh boy. Look, shut up.
Shut up, China.
There is so much to love about Sable. Off the bat, I want to make that absolutely clear. Like, I have not experienced any crashes. I have experienced one game-breaking bug, similar to what you outlined, except for me, it was... I was locked out of doing any other action except walking Sable in a straight line forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, like, quit out of the game and then reload it to kind of, you know, get everything fresh again. It was particularly frustrating because at that point in time, I was making an attempt on climbing one of the, like, spires that cartographers in the game are. Yeah. You find them up there. And I was almost at the top, and then it, like, bugged out and just walked me off the edge, and I fell to the ground and kept walking. I was like, oh, no! I spent so long climbing this fucking thing. So, but apart from that, I haven't had anything that I would define as game-breaking. My big problem is that this thing chugs. It chugs super hard at times.
Okay, so you're playing it on Xbox One. I'm playing it on Xbox Series S. I would not describe it as chuggy at any point in my playthrough. Right.
I've checked in with a few other people. One who was playing on like decently specced gaming PC. Another one who I'm guessing would be playing on Xbox Series S or X, and they both said like they've had problems with it juddering as well.
I've read people having problems with it across all ways you can play it. So yeah, I'm not saying it's an Xbox One thing.
So. From the get-go, it bums me out as well because obviously first impressions are the ones that people tend to go off. And a lot of people's first impressions of this game is going to be, this is undercooked. This should have delayed 6 months maybe to kind of optimize the code a bit more and chase down some of these bugs and whatnot. But I was talking about positive stuff. I'm talking about positive stuff. So the story of Sable is you play... the young title character, who is a young girl called Sable, who belongs to a clan.
You just missed the opportunity to say the word titular.
That's
my favorite word.
Yeah, you play this young girl, Sable, who is part of the Abexi clan in a world called Midden. In this world of Midden, at a certain age, people go through a kind of rite of passage that's known as the gliding. And the point of this is that you leave your clan and you head out into the world to essentially discover who you are. You go around, you talk to people who you know, potentially will give you jobs. And if you complete these jobs, they give you badges according to what sort of profession they belong to. And once you have three badges, you can visit a mask maker and have a mask around... whatever your chosen profession is. That's kind of how you find yourself in the end. What I've just described is kind of one of the first things that I really love about the game. Like, what an evocative quest just to be sent out into the world and discover yourself. There's no combat in this game. There's no great evil you're expected to best. There's no kind of rot to scourge from the land or anything. It is just hop upon your bike, head out into the world, explore, talk to people, do whatever you want. And once you feel like you've discovered who you are as a character, great. You've
come back and have a ceremony. It's time to party. I like that before you head out on your gliding, every older character you've spoken to has already obviously done their gliding and decided who they want to be. And so they're offering you advice. And then there's one girl in your hometown that is obviously younger than you and has not done the gliding. And all she knows of the gliding is that so many people that she knew that were older than her haven't come back, and she doesn't want you to do the same thing. So it's kind of cool seeing all the different takes on this thing that you're about to embark on, from, you know, whether they've their own experiences or the experiences of other people doing it and them watching.
And that's, I mean, the lore in this world is great because it doesn't feel heavy or complex. It feels relatively light in that, mm-hmm. you know, they're not drowning you in decades or centuries of history. It is, hey, you're of the age now where you go out into the world. It's called the gliding. Go and do your thing, essentially.
I really love the writing in this. Like, you'll have, you know, dialogue options. You'll say, someone will ask, how are you? And it'll say, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm indifferent. And you can choose, I'm happy. And then the subtext will appear and it'll say, like, I tell her I'm happy, even though I'm fighting other emotions from spilling out of my mouth as I talk. And, like, I really like that way that it fills in little blanks of subtext that other games wouldn't.
Yeah, you essentially, it's in between dialogue, you'll often have Sable herself, like, narrating either her own feelings or how she's perceiving the person that she's talking to. And some of those bits of prose are really kind of like quite poetic in a way, like very, very beautifully written. Another thing that I think to love about this game is, obviously, as we gushed before, the visual style of it.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, like, you start the game in a temple, and as you kind of make your way out of the temple for the first time to reveal this, like, brilliant sunlit desert vista with the camp of your nomad tribe in the distance, absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, like, it looks incredible.
Yeah,
there's a day and night cycle, so in the daytime it looks, I don't know, do you prefer walking around, making your way around this world in the day or in the night?
I think definitely day.
Yeah, it's a lot more vibrant.
It gets a little muted for me at night.
What, there are some points in the cycle where, like, yeah, you're pretty much playing just a one-toned game. It's like the one color.
It's also the same when you're doing some of the exploration of, like, temples and spaceships. It goes down to, like, yeah, just a really kind of soft mauve color
mm-hmm.
for dark spaces, but still everything kind of outlined, which can make things a little bit tricky, but it's an interesting visual kind of approach to doing darkness rather than just it's black.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, so you meet lots of different people as you go out on your gliding, and they will ask you to help them in some way. Like, for example, I met a mechanist.
Yep.
And basically, yeah, you, if you want to get a badge, if you get 3 badges from the mechanists, you can become a mechanist. So I did. I already had one. You leave your hometown with one already. And so the moment I met another, I was like, fuck it, I'll make this my second badge I get. And the mechanist said, out on the other side of town, there's like a wind turbine, and it's not working. Go out and figure out what's wrong with it. And so you trek. Basically, you have to drive on your hover bike for, I don't know, like 5 minutes through like a pretty barren but beautiful world. And then once you get to the destination, you have to figure out how you're going to get to the top of it. You are able to climb, but a la Breath of the Wild, you have a stamina meter that if you max it out as you're halfway up a mountain, you'll fall down. So yeah, once you get to the top of it, there's something stuck causing the wind turbine to not move. So you have to repair it, then you go back on that massive trek back to the town that you were in, and the mechanist is like, thanks for that, here's your badge. So they're pretty, some of them are pretty like easy like that. Others will be a bit more puzzly of nature. There's like also lots of crashed spaceships that you basically find. You have to explore until you find like the cockpit, and then you get like a black box kind of thing where you find like the last conversation the pilot and the people on board had before.
Yeah, and that becomes an ongoing quest, is to track down all of these things. I just the last thing I was doing in one of the areas, because it's interesting, it doesn't necessarily funnel you to a particular area.
No.
After, I mean, obviously once you leave your first, you know, the area where your nomad camp is, and it kind of pushes you towards a region. But then after that, it's really, you can explore however you want. So I'm curious if we've even seen the same parts of the map yet. But I've just had a pretty great experience exploring this like absolutely colossal crash spaceship called the Whale.
Cool. I noticed I went on because I wanted to know how much for more of the game you'd played than me. So I looked on your profile and we have a few of the same achievements. And yeah, you've explored one of the other spaceships that I have, but I've not met the Whale yet. That's exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, generally whenever like one of the things I've realized similar, I guess, to Breath of the Wild, like the first thing I do when I enter a new region is track down the geographical feature that the cartographer
For those who don't know, cartographer is French for map cunt.
Yes, I was going to say, this game has map cunts. Yeah, so track down where they are, go find them and buy the new map, essentially. And when you get the map, it doesn't necessarily, or it doesn't tell you, like, here are all the things on it. You just, like, you kind of look at it and work out, like, okay, that big, you know, blob that is colored differently from the blobs around it, that's probably something I want to go check out, essentially.
Yeah, totally. And other, which is, other people you meet will be like, hey, east of here, there is a, you know, a bug nest. Go get some bugs. So there is a lot of, like, you have a, basically if you push the left trigger, I think it is, it pulls up a compass around you. You can use that to kind of orient yourself towards things that you've marked on the map, because the other bumper brings up a telescope that you can put landmarks on the map with.
Which that function is a bit awkward, in my opinion.
The more I've used it, the easier it is. But there are some points in the map where it, like, you'll be like, why does this look weird? And you realize because it's like she's looking like immediately in front of her, and you've got to make it go all the way out to where you want to look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another huge highlight is the soundtrack.
Man. So there
oh
is
my
like,
God.
Yeah.
Japanese like, breakfast knocked it out of the fucking park.
There's lots of great interstitial moments of music in, like, you know, certain areas have a score. But I mean, I think the best example of this happening is, in Red Dead Redemption, the PlayStation
Mexico.
3 one. Yeah. I think Jose Gonzalez song plays at one point. Yeah, yeah. And it's this beautiful moment because, mostly it's just interstitial music playing during that game. Lots of, you know, banjos and whatnot. But this is like, yeah, just like you're this moment of peace as you finally get to Mexico. After this, like, hellish gunfire battle to get there. It's a great game. this beautiful moment of clarity as the song plays. And so, yeah, I imagine this would have been when the demo finished, playing. Once you've assembled your bike and said goodbye to your village, you kind of go through this big archway, and that's when the music starts playing and Sable comes across the screen. And until the song stops, you were just gliding around as this incredible song, which you've no doubt heard if you've been paying attention to this game. It was performed by Japanese Breakfast at last year's Game Awards, baby. Or was it the game? Or no, it was Summer Games Fest, whatever it was. One of the Jeff Keighley things. But that plays, and it was not quite as special as the Red Dead moment. The song is just as good, if not better. But I was on a glider, and the camera pans up to show you like the writing for Sable, and then when it panned down, you have this beautiful music as my glider and Sable upon it were trying to like go vertically up a rock. a pretty funny clunky moment set to a beautiful soundtrack.
Okay, so as I said at the top, there is a lot to love about Sable.
That's the end of the episode. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Don't stop me from doing this, Levins. Above and beyond. Okay, so some of the qualms I have. One, the writing is fantastic, but it definitely needs to go through some editors and some proofreaders again.
Okay.
I've picked up some missing words, some missing punctuation, and I've noticed on a few conversations this clunky tendency to like, so you choose the dialogue option you want. So it'll be like, what's there to see around here? And then it'll come up with one of those little bits of, you know, sort of Sable narrating what she's doing. And it will start with, I ask them what there's to see around here. And it's like, I know, I just selected that option. You don't need to kind of tell me this again. Like, you could cut that sentence out and the rest of it would work perfectly, but it just feels clunky with it there. There is also, I've noticed, a bit of a, like, the way it handles the dialogue engine feels like it's not applied the same way to everybody, because, like...
Yeah, I'll agree with you with that, there, yeah.
There'll be some times where it's like, I'll pick a dialogue option, they'll talk to me, and then they'll go, okay, bye, and exit, even though there are other things I want to say to them. Whereas some characters, it's like, you have to manually exit the conversation yourself. And it's one of those things where it's like, I don't care which side you choose, just make it uniform for everybody kind of thing.
Yep.
You agree?
Not really that part, but there are moments within the chat engine with certain characters. Like, you'll select, like, you'll say you want to give a character something, you'll give it to them, and then it will say, hey, Sable, nice to see you today. What's on your mind? And it's like, no, we've had our conversation already. Yeah. I gave you this item, and then you have to, like, go through a forced dialogue.
Well, I even, like, I ran into, because I made it to a third spaceship cockpit, and I'd obviously, like, when you go through the first one, it's like, hey, you kind of set up a profile on this spaceship, like a security profile. Mm-hmm. And then the second ship I went to, the AI, Saren, which is the name of the AI, was like, hey, welcome back, Sable. There's some new messages waiting for you. And obviously I got like a new little hit of thing. Then the third spaceship cockpit I went to, it was like, hey, we need to set you up with a security profile. And I was like, what? No, I've done that. Like, you should know who I am by this point. You're the third spaceship I've visited. So there's definitely some stuff like this. All right, this point, you're probably going to find wild contentious. The hover bike is dog shit.
No, it's great. It's like, I love my clunky little red stripe guy. He's awesome.
It's just like... It basically comes down to like, I'll be fanging along on this thing. I'll go off the edge of a dune. And instead of like doing a graceful kind of jump and then landing or something, it like flies a bit out, sinks like a stone, and then hits the ground like a deflated basketball. And it just like, you know, and suddenly I'm like, I'm having to correct my steering and all this kind of stuff. Like, I'm just, at first, because, you know, you mentioned earlier, like the journeys you go on are quite long and particularly barren. There's not a lot to see between like, you know, the town, the location you start at and where you're going to, mm-hmm. which I was going to have as like a complaint, but it's sort of like the places you go to explore feel rich and complex enough that I don't feel like I'm missing out on a lot elsewhere. But the first few times I went out, I was like, this is going to be sick. It's going to feel so great, like fanging around on my hover bike. And then after about 10 minutes of driving that thing and it just feeling kind of clunky, I was like, thank God there is a fast travel option. Because, you know, rather than having to, if you go back to the map, if it's somewhere you visited before, you can fast travel to get there.
All right.
So I was like, okay, I'm now driving out to places, and then once I've done what I need to do there, I'm going to fast travel back. Just like, if they just tweaked the physics on the bike a little more so landing off a jump didn't feel quite so heavy, or even you don't go flying off the edge of a dune, you just kind of like hug the dune up and down so it feels like this nice sort of gently rolling trip around, that I think would be a bit more satisfying to me.
I think, yeah, my love of like the exhaust, the beautiful line of exhaust that follows you, I think that overshadows any clunkiness in terms of, I forgive, I'm pretty forgiving of that.
Yeah, I do love that aspect for it. And I love that your bike is, you can get a heap of like bike customizations and upgrades at various places.
Yeah, and I imagine like, you know, you can improve the handling and the speed. So I imagine you are going to be able to have like a much smoother experience the more you play it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely... I'm looking forward to kind of exploring some of those. I mean, I just arrived at what I think is one of the major settlements in the whole map, which is a town called Ekria.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm super looking forward to getting in there and exploring, because I think there's tons of people to talk to in there. Straight off the bat, I got given a job from one of the city guards, because when you get there, they're like, oh, the power's out in town, and everyone's kind of freaking out about it. And a guard walks up to you when you enter the city and is like, you look like you can handle yourself, glider. Plus, you'll be free labor, essentially. So go and do this.
Here's a sword. Like, go kill everyone freaking out about the electricity.
Yeah. This place is becoming a police state. Have fun, Sable. No, he's like, look, I need you to take this old power core and get it charged back up, but also see if you can find out who might be behind these blackouts and that kind of stuff. So I'm super looking forward to going back in. And it's one of those things where it's like all of these things that I've mentioned are outweighed by what makes this game fantastic. Like, sure. I'm not sitting here being like, don't play this game. I think over time it will definitely, like, Shedworks will continue working on this. They'll patch out most of the buggy stuff. They'll they'll smooth out the code with some optimization to make sure that it loses that chugging. And it'll just get better and better. As for, like, the handling of the bike and some of the dialogue engine stuff, it is what it is. Maybe they'll turn their attention to that. Maybe they won't. Maybe it is part of it being undercooked. They just ran out of time to really polish that sort of stuff.
I think it adds to the charm, but I can see people calling me out for that being a cop-out. But I don't know. This game, it is a bike that you've put together out of scrap parts that you found. It makes sense to me within the game that maybe it handles like shit sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if I put new parts on my bike and it starts handling much better, then I'll have that understanding of, okay, yep, it's part of the sort of, the like subtextual narrative of, like you said, you built a bike from scrap. Now you have now I've put proper parts on it. It's much better handling. There's no reverse on the bike as well. That gets frustrating. Oh, I will say it does have, actually, that's one great thing and one annoying thing. You can whistle for your bike.
Yep.
Like, so if you're out and about and you've landed
somewhere. I'm certain that the left trigger reverses.
I've tried. I think it's just brake, maybe. I'm
looking forward to another apology.
I would love it if you have to apologize.
Apologize for liking your game too much that I accidentally invented a reverse button, Sable.
So I love that you can whistle for your bike. And I also love the way that, like, the whistle is you yelling the name of your bike. Like, your bike has a name that, it's a lot of mechanist kind of lore around it, like things having names long before they're built. But just hearing Sable yell, Samoon, I don't know, there's something weirdly satisfying about that.
Yep.
But one annoyance I have is that often when I'm going on a ride, this big white box pop-up will come up saying, hey, don't forget, if you can't find your bike, look on your compass and, like, where this blue symbol is, that's where your bike is. And I'm like, I don't need that anymore. I can whistle for my bike.
Yeah, I've never had that.
I've had it, like, it weirdly has popped up so many times while I've been playing. And on top of the fact that, like, I can call my bike whenever I want, I don't need to look on the compass for it. You've told me this 4 times before. Why do you keep telling me this? So look, like I said, so much to love, so many reasons to play it. There's rough edges. If you feel like the rough edges are going to bother you heaps, give it a month or two. There's no I have no doubt that Shedworks are working, like, putting in the hard yards to kind of polish this game up even further now that it's launched. But if you are, if you're not afraid of a raw game situation, dive on in now, guys. The water's fine.
It's beautiful. I really love it. I it's all I can think about right now. I thought I was going to 100% Flynn, Son of Crimson this week, but Sable is taking priority. So this will be the game that, and I'm in that for the first time in a while. I need to stay up and play this one late, and kill myself while I play this. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you'll only be killing yourself. You won't be killing Sable.
Nope, or anyone in that game. Not even a bug. I liked that part where you had to, like, climb the tree, get the seed. The bugs eat the seed, and you steal the bug.
Hey, guess what? Skipped that bit.
How?
There's a cave under the nomad camp. Yep. Because when you talk to people to find out what to do, they're like, oh, you could go get these beetles from over there. You'll need to do this to kind of attract the beetles out. But you can ask another thing, which is like, where does the little shitty kid that's stolen whatever you're looking for, like, where do you think they hide stuff? And they go, well, we don't know, but she does spend a lot of time in the cave underneath nomad camp. And so I just went for a wander around and was like, there's a cave. There's a smaller part of the... Hey, I found the thing. Sick.
Oh, so you just took it from her without her even... Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I stole it from her hiding place. Like, I didn't need to go do the Beatles thing.
Oh, see, I really liked the Beatles thing, so maybe you miss out on the best part of the game. This is why I like it more than you.
Have you met the Chum Queen?
No, I just have all these fucking eggs. What do you do with the eggs?
You'll meet a character, which is like the sort of grown-up version of what hatches out of these eggs. And she asks you to go and find these eggs and bring them to her so she can raise what's in the eggs herself.
Right.
And in return, she upgrades your stamina.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which makes, you know, a lot of the traversal a lot easier.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, cool. I love a stamina upgrade. Looking forward to that.
Plus, the interactions with the Chum Queen are like oddly really nice.
Okay, unreal. Cool. Yeah. As are most interactions with people in this game. It's lovely.
Yeah.
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 Awesome. So that is our review of Sable. Like I mentioned earlier, it's available on Game Pass, Xbox, and PC. Of course, we talked about Flynn, Son of Crimson earlier in the game. And I forgot to mention where you can play that. I believe you can play it everywhere. I think it's on Xbox, PlayStation. Let's have a look. Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. So there you go. Oh, and nice. Mac too. So it's on everything. Definitely give both games a shot. I think they're two big highlights of the year. That I enjoy a lot. It's a good time to love lots of games. So that has been the episode. I've been Andrew Levins. That has been John Valenzuela. And this has been All the Small Games. If you want to find us online, you can at facebook.com/allthesmallgames or Twitter. We are at All the Small Game. If you want more, if this is your first episode, we record every single week. The episode goes up maybe the first half of the week each week. I don't want to commit to a day because we're in lockdown and shit's weird trying to schedule time.
Yes.
But we have a Patreon if you want bonus episodes. We just recently recorded an episode of our side podcast, All the Other Things, where we talk about everything that isn't an indie game. And this most recent episode, I talked about Stephen Chow, who directed the movies Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer, From Beijing with Love, CJ7, and The Mermaid. I've been rewatching a lot of his excellent Hong Kong comedy action movies. And we talked about our favorite ones of his movies. John, what did you discuss? I can't remember.
I talked about the new Disney Plus series, Only Murders in the Building.
Yep.
Also discussed a kind of hybrid stand-up special and documentary, which is Rory Scovel's Live Without Fear.
Perfect.
And I think you went on a bit of a deep dive of like your love of Wario games.
Yep. I love those Wario games. Look, I don't know which celebrity is playing him in the Mario movie, but it can only be better than whoever's playing Mario.
True.
This has been All the Small Games. If you want to hear our bonus episodes, patreon.com/allthesmallgames is our Patreon. $5 a month gets you two bonus episodes every single month, plus access to our Discord community, which we would love for you to join, so you can talk about indie games and other things with a host of excellent, excellent listeners just like yourself. Finally, if you want to email the show, you can. allthesmallgames@gmail.com is the way to get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.